Okay, I think we'll go ahead and get started with a few seconds earlier. Thanks for attending.
Now,
this used to be, I think, something about crowdfunding. I just want to make sure that everyone knows that is not the topic. We kind of changed. This is a very last minute addition, so I appreciate you guys showing up. It wasn't in the printed schedule. So this is kind of advice for freelancers. If you got side gigs, if you're creative, artists, basically anybody who is, you know, trying to make some money on the side or trying to make money doing what you love, hopefully. I have some tips here. We're going to go through the slides. But I think in an environment like this, Q&A at the end is really valuable because I'm sure a lot of you have specific questions or comments or advice you might be looking for, anything with finance or taxes. So I'm going to go fairly quickly through the slides. If you have questions, raise your hand. If they're just quick one-hitters, I'll try to answer them. Otherwise, we'll save the Q&A for the end. Okay? So, who am I? My name is Neil Narayas. We just rebranded the blog, Learning Finance, and we're just kind of in existence to try to help creatives with finance and tips and taxes and all sorts of good stuff like that. And we're kind of rebranding, so we are there, Nerdy Finance, but it's being updated right now. All right, here we go. So we're going to cover a few topics here, whether you have a hobby doing what you love, or is it truly a business? And that really does matter in the eyes of the IRS. We'll look at top five deductions for freelancers and creatives. We'll take a look at the right business entity or structure. We'll also answer the question if you need, quote unquote, need an LLC. We'll touch on this thing called estimated tax payments. And we'll touch upon the new Trump tax law, how that may affect you guys as freelancers or creatives, and then we're going to have Q&A. So the first major topic is whether or not what you guys do is classified as a hobby, something you love to do, you love to paint, you love to write, you love to cosplay, or is it a business? Are you actually trying to make money doing those endeavors? The IRS says that if you have expenses doing what you love to do, and you're trying to make money, you're actually operating as a business, you can actually have a loss on your taxes. So if you spent $5,000 doing what you love to do as a business, you could actually take that $5,000 loss if you have zero income and subtract that from maybe other income, W-2, maybe your spouse's W-2 income, and you could actually get your taxes. But the key is you're actually trying to run a business. You're trying to make money doing this. IRS has about 8 or 9 factors that they look at to determine, okay, is this a hobby? You're just trying to do this for fun? Trying to make a little bit of side money? Or are you actually trying to do this as a business? Are you acting like a business? With the time and effort, are you just doing it one day a month? That probably wouldn't fly. Or do you depend on the income? Like, hey, I need to make money on this. I need to sell my paintings if I could live, to eat. Are losses beyond your control? If you have like huge losses, was that because something catastrophic might have happened? Did you change strategy to be profitable? So let's say you're putting your stuff out on IG, on Instagram, and you're just not getting those sales. Are you doing anything different to try to change strategy to actually make some money? Do you have the knowledge and skill? You know, how are you a writer? Are you an established artist? Did you make a profit in the past? Did you used to make money doing this? If you made a profit, how much? Did you make $2? Or did you make a significant amount of money? These are factors that the IRS, if they come calling, if you have loss after loss after loss on your taxes, and if they come calling, they're going to say, okay, are you a business or are you just doing this kind of on the side? And if they determine that you're doing it on the side as a hobby, they will not allow you to deduct those losses beyond any money you made from your hobby, if they call it a hobby. Okay, so top five deductions that a lot of freelancers, creatives contain. We're going to look at home office deduction, deducting travel, meals, material supplies. Hiring your kids kind of an esoteric kind of thing, and we'll go into detail on that. But why are deductions important? So on average, every dollar you can reduce your income by, every deduction you have, will reduce your tax bill by 45 cents, or it'll increase your refund by 45 cents. And that comes from ballpark 25% tax rate. As a self-employed person, as a creative, as a freelancer, you also have to pay your Social Security Medicare tax. That's about 15%. And the average state tax is about 5%. California, of course, is higher. That's where you get about 40-45% savings for every dollar you can deduct to your future income by. So it's like a home office. What is it? It's a deduction for part of your home. It doesn't have to be a full room. It doesn't have to be a full studio. It can be, if you live in a one-bedroom apartment, maybe you dedicate exclusively for your endeavors just a 5x5 square foot area. You could use that area to determine how could I calculate a home office deduction. It doesn't have to be the whole house. And again, the place has to be exclusively for work. So it can't be, if you have an office in your bedroom with your bed and your TV and your dresser, only the area that's exclusively for your work can be counted. And essentially, it's regular and exclusive. It has to be a percentage of your overall square footage. So let's say you have a 10 by 10 room, 100 square feet, 1,000 square foot house. That's 10% of the house is used for an office. So now we can take 10% of your rent, if you're paying rent, your mortgage interest and property tax if you own, 10% of utilities or insurance. If you have an HOA, depreciation is kind of an advanced topic, but talk to your tax advisor for that. But you can take 10% of those expenses, in my example I have 20%, and use that as a home office deduction. One little caveat though is that you cannot, the home office deduction, let's say you have a negative $1,000 due to your home office deduction, and you have zero income, you can't use the home office loss to create a negative loss, even if you're running a business. That's just a special little rule the IRS has, because then everybody would say, oh, I started a dog walking business, and they're now deducting this, even though they have zero income. So that's just a little thing to be aware of, that if you have a negative number and a home office deduction, you can't use it if your income is zero, or it can't create a loss. This is kind of just an example I gave with some quote-unquote real numbers here. So if your rent is, let's say, $1,000 a month, you spend $500 on insurance, $1,000 a year on utilities, and 20% of your home, that's a $2,700 deduction. And if you own your home, it might even be more because of that little depreciation. So it's pretty valuable. Okay, travel. Deducting travel, that's huge, right? Comic-Con here, your flight, your car rental, your hotel. You can deduct all travel-related expenses as long as you can claim the place you went to, the convention, the seminar, the meeting, was for your business, right? If you can make that, if you can apply that towards a career endeavor, you're trying to network, you're attending panels like this. This, if you have a business, this now becomes a legitimate reason to say, hey, at least a portion of all my expenses at Comic-Con are deductible. If you're here for 4 days and this is the only panel you're attending, then maybe 1/4 of your plane ticket, your hotel, your food, your Uber, whatever the case may be, is now legitimately deductible. Yeah.
Do you need to have an actual receipt, or does the credit card receipt?
I'll hit that one because that's a very popular thing. You need an actual receipt. A lot of people think, well, I have a credit card statement. It says, you know, it says the Hilton, it says Old Spaghetti Factory, it says all this. The reason why that doesn't count, if you're audited, the reason why that will not be strong enough is because the IRS doesn't know if you just covered somebody's food bill and put it on your card and they gave you some money back. Or you bought the plane tickets for your family to come here on your card, but you're the only one who has the business. But you could say, oh, look, see, I spent $4,000 on United Airlines first class. So when you show the receipt, it has your name, it's itemized. Okay, that proves it. So a credit card statement is not good enough to prove deductions if you're audited. So as I mentioned, travel must be primarily for business reasons. If you take a 5-day trip and only 1 day is for business, you take 1/5 of those costs. Meals, pretty straightforward. Very common. It's not, and none of these things you should consider, this whole idea of red flags. Red flags you should never worry about if you're doing everything correctly. If you're doing everything correctly by the book, if you get audited, you should just kind of shrug your shoulders. Here are my receipts. Take a look. So meals, very commonplace deduction. You can deduct 50% of your meals cost if you meet with somebody, an artist or a mentor, or meet, you take me out to dinner, and treat them out. 50% of that cost, as long as it's business, is deductible. And it must be primarily for business reasons, and the discussion must occur before, after, or during the meal. Materials and supplies, pretty self-explanatory. Anything you purchase to help you make money. It's a new laptop, paintbrushes, Wacom tablet, costume material to develop to make a costume, your cosplayer. Anything you spend money out of your pocket to help you try to make money is deducted. Okay, just make sure you have receipts and all that good stuff. Yeah, so most people, 95 or more percent of people, are what's called a calendar year taxpayer. That means anything between January 1st and December 31st, whatever was spent in that year, that applies to that tax year, 2019. Right? There's something called, again, depreciation. If you buy something really major, significant, talking like thousands of dollars, you might have to what's called depreciate that. Just take a portion of the expense every year. Again, a pretty high level concept that's probably above what we want to discuss here. But be aware of that if it's a kind of a high ticket item. Again, talk to your tax professional. Yeah.
Do these five things, do you have to be like an LLC or just
we'll talk about that. And so yeah, something like with a laptop, that's really popular, right? I need a new MacBook or something. If you're using it just for writing or just for your graphics, 100%, then you can deduct 100% of that laptop cost. If you're saying, well, I use it half for business, half for personal use, then you take that appropriate percentage as a deduction. Yeah.
You have a laptop or a tablet, you're using it for business, but you check your personal emails.
Sure.
Do you want to have to figure out the percentage?
You'd have to figure out a percentage that you feel you can justify. If you're in front of an IRS auditor that you feel you can justify, you can say, I claim 90%, let's say business. And then you can say, hey, take a look. It's 90% of my emails are business. 90% of my, that's the pictures you see are all business pictures. Now, if it's 90% of you picture your dog and your family, then they'll go, you know, that's so, but you feel you can justify in front of an auditor. Feel comfortable with it. How many of you here have kids? Okay, so yeah, two. So just real touch upon this. If you have your own business, and we'll talk about business structures, there is a nice little benefit that if you hire your child to do some work for you, you can actually deduct their wages as a deduction, right? And you're giving it to them, and odds are they're probably in a lower tax bracket or not going to pay any tax on the money you give them. So it kind of works in a nice little way there. But again, with two people, we're not going to kind of delve too much into that. But that's a kind of really powerful strategy if you have kids and you have a business. Here's an example. Maybe your kid's helping you organize prints to mail out, or you're cleaning up the studio, liking things for you on your social media channel, taking like. There are a lot of things that your kids can legitimately do. Again, it has to be legitimate. It has to be for the business. You actually have to be paying them. It has to be reasonable. So if you have a 10-year-old kid who's, you know, cleaning up your studio or mailing stuff out, you can't be paying them probably $30,000 a year and claim that. So again, reasonable. What you would pay a kid to do, that's what you can do. If a 10-year-old were to come to you, hey, you need help doing that? I'll give you $10 an hour. That's what you're willing to pay is probably reasonable. Okay, business structure. So a lot of people start off in business. They say, what should I be? LLC? Should I be? We'll talk about the LLC, but these are the main business structures that you can be for tax purposes. Most people will be what's called a sole proprietor. You're just kind of doing it on your own. It's called a Schedule C on your taxes. But you don't have to file any paperwork. You don't have to do anything. You can just say, today, I am an artist, and I'm starting Joe Blow Artist Industries. You're done. You're officially a business. Nothing has to be done. All your income is taxable. That's the golden rule. All income is always taxable. So that's sole proprietorship. Partnership sounds as it implies. You and your brother are, you know, Joe and Jimmy photography brothers, and you're doing wedding photos. Your partnership, and however you guys want to split up the money or the expenses, up to you. It could be 90%, 10%, it could be whatever you want. A lot of flexibility there. And again, you're subject to the SE, stands for self-employment taxes, Social Security, Medicare taxes. Now we get into, I'll put to the bottom real quick, C Corp. Less than 1% of freelancers, artists are going to be C Corp. These are the big companies that you know and love, right? You know, Apple, GM, Walmart, so very few of you will be a C Corp. S Corp is something that you might want to consider if you're profitable and fairly significantly profitable. A very ballpark number we like to give our clients is about 60-ish thousand or more. You might want to consider becoming what's called an S Corp. And why is that? Because there's a potential to save on the self-employment taxes, that 15% on some of your money. And the reason why there's kind of a, it doesn't really make sense if you're not making money, because there's no self-employment tax to save if you're not making money. Or if you're making $5,000, $10,000 here, there are rules which will not necessarily allow you to save on that self-employment tax. Plus, you are now a corporation, and that comes with certain fees for your state to file. You need to file a corporate tax return. So those costs will probably outweigh any potential benefits when you're below about 60-ish, 70-ish thousand in profits. Do I need an LLC? Oh, yeah.
Last slide. For the sole proprietorship, how does that impact standard or itemized deductions?
It has nothing to do with the standard itemized deductions because your business is a separate form that you're going to calculate either profitability or loss on a separate form, and then that gets folded into your main tax return. And on your main tax return, that's when you figure out, okay, am I taking a standard deduction or itemized deduction? Everything's self-contained within the business, the Schedule C. Yeah.
For your S Corp, does it need to be set up in the state beforehand?
Yes. Yeah. And I'll touch a little bit on the LLC thing, so, and because the state question comes up a lot. So what is it? It stands for a limited liability company. Some people think it stands for corporation. It's not. It stands for a limited liability company. And at its core, all it does is protect you. It limits your liability in case you get sued for something. If done right, if you're sued for something, the person suing you can only take the assets that are in the LLC. Okay? There's no inherent tax savings and having an LLC. Okay, think of it as just like a title or a corporate shell a protectionary shell that you put all your stuff in, and that is what's available to be taken if you're sued. It's protectionary. In fact, and it's organized at the state level. Okay, the IRS doesn't even recognize it. It's not a thing to them. You have to tell the IRS, tax me. I have an LLC in California. Tax me as a sole proprietor, a partnership, an S Corp, or a C Corp. If you say nothing, they'll assume you're just a sole proprietor. Okay, so it's not even a thing for federal tax purposes. A lot of people hear, hey, you should have an LLC in Delaware or Nevada or Wyoming. That's because those states have friendly laws. Again, this is state specific. They have friendly laws if you're sued, they're very friendly. But if you live, an example, California, and you open up your LLC in Nevada, Delaware, you still have to file it in California because that's where you live. You're using California resources, the schools, the roads. So California always wants part of that money. Yeah?
Would that also hold true if you were temporarily staying? Like, you file your LLC in Nevada, but you're staying in Nevada while you're working?
If the money, California's a unique thing. Oh, who here is not from California? Okay, well, California's a unique one where they're going to say, if the money came from California, if you had sales from California and you live in Nevada, we might want to cut it out. Okay? I could speak specifically more expertise in California because I live here and work here. But most states, if you live in Nevada, basically where you live, you definitely need to file an LLC there. That's period. If you want to file an LLC in another Delaware or something like that, it may or may not be beneficial to you, but it's absolutely zero benefit to you if you have no business in Delaware to file an LLC in Delaware because there's no Delaware's not going to protect you because you have no business. Yeah.
Okay, what I'm confused on the LLC, I walk in two worlds. What makes a profit and I live off of is a real estate broker. Mm-hmm. I have new home developers, LLC, I get it. But I also help run a fan convention. Mm-hmm. And this year, a good chunk of the talent said, I started an LLC because 50% of my deductions disappeared. And this is how I got told I can get the deductions back. So here I am sitting here ready to ask you.
No.
And you're saying, that's not what it's
not. No.
It should have been an S-4.
Well,
maybe.
Maybe. Every good taxpayer or venture, it depends. It's the first two words I'm going to say, it depends. But no, again, LLC is not, offers you no inherent tax benefits. Okay, I don't know what, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of, oh, my 50% of my deductions are gone. All right.
Well, actually, real estate, yes. And a bunch of real estate.
We'll talk about
it.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah.
Quick question.
So, if you don't have an LLC, two people start the owner, the best way for the IRS
not necessarily. Again, it depends. Right? It depends. Right? If you're profitable, if you're showing, again, it's mentioned kind of it's a very ballpark number, right? Everybody's situation is going to be different. 60, 70, 80, maybe that's the right answer for you. Maybe. Okay. Typically, you might just be a partnership. You can't be a sole proprietor if it's more than one. Automatically a partnership. You either partnership or something else. Because there's more than one person. Right? Anything else on the LLC?
So if I move from one state to another state, I have to open up an LLC. It's not something
that's done. No. There are a handful of states that will recognize an audit, like a nice, clean. You still have to file paperwork to say, hey, California, I no longer live there. Close down my LLC. Hey, Nevada, I'm now here. Open my. You still paperwork still has to be filed, regardless.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Pros and cons. So the pros, it provides liability protection if properly structured. Okay. Get professional advice if you are thinking about opening an LLC. So I'll give you a couple of examples. If I'm an artist, if I'm doing commission sketches out here on the floor, what are the odds that I give somebody a commission sketch, I charge them $100, they're going to sue me for all I have? Probably low. So you probably don't need, quote unquote, need an LLC, especially, again, California specific. California wants $800 a year just to have an LLC open, even if you do nothing with it or if you lose money. So what is that worth to you, that piece of my protection? For an artist, in that example, probably not worth it. Let's say, and this isn't maybe not creative, let's say you run a food truck, right? And you're giving people food, the potential for food poisoning. That's a higher threshold where you might want to say, okay, it's worth it for me to open up this food truck business in an LLC because I want to protect my assets, my home and everything in case the crap hits the fan. That depends on the nature of what they're suing for. I'm not an attorney, but if there's something they call piercing the corporate veil, if there's gross negligence on your part, odds are everything's open. If you're shown that you've committed some, if you've done really bad stuff, odds are they're going to happen, yeah. It's relatively easy to set up. In California, again, I keep saying, I'm sorry, I'm kind of California specific because that's where, it's literally a one-page thing. You fill it out, very simple to fill out. But talk to an attorney. But there are a lot of online resources where you could do it yourself. Cons, again, in California, $800 a year to stay open. And then maintenance, you have to keep books and records. It's a thing, right? You need to, as I said, if properly structured, it will protect you against lawsuits, your personal assets against lawsuits.
When
you
say $800 a year, is that calendar year? Or is that if you open an LLC,
yeah.
Would that $800 only cover you through December?
It's calendar year except for when the year you open it. So, again, I keep saying California. In California, I think you have all the way up to December 10th. If you open it before before those 330, whatever, my math's bad, 340 days before, if you have a December 10th, they want $800 to cover you for those last 3 weeks. And then January 1st, they want another $800. So once you're open, it is every calendar year. But California's really bad in that. No matter when you open it, they want the first $800 within a few months of opening. So ask yourself, these are kind of the questions. How likely am I to be sued for my creative works? Do you even have assets to be taken? Right? If you're renting, you own maybe a beater car, you don't own a home, you really don't have much of a saving, do you really need asset protection? If you're sued, here, take my $50 from my Wells Fargo account. See how much your state charges. I know California's one of the most expensive. What's your risk tolerance? What helps you sleep better at night? Maybe, even if it's unlikely to be sued, it makes you sleep better at night to know you're protected. So that $800 is worth it to you. All right, it's all individual. Alternative, maybe you buy insurance for your specific industry. Maybe there's an example I gave for food trucks. Maybe there's a special insurance policy for food truck people that will cover you a $2 million lawsuit for $200 a year. Maybe that's a better choice, a cheaper choice. A general umbrella policy, and I won't get too much into it. Umbrella policy means it just covers you for almost anything that happens. You can get a general umbrella policy, $1 million policy, for about $200 a year. And that protects you against anything. It's called umbrella because it covers all sorts of stuff. Car wrecks, someone seeing you for something. So that might be a better alternative. Again, no one can answer that, what your risk tolerance is. That's kind of personal to you, but realize that there are alternatives out there. Estimated tax payments. So who here is actually making money as a creator? Okay, so estimated tax payments. Golden rule, IRS is going to get their money no matter what. And you make a dollar in profit, you owe some taxes. And at the end of the year, if you're not making what's called estimated payments, what these are, or these are about prepayment throughout the year of what your tax bill is going to be when you do your taxes next year. Right, so let's say, and I'll throw out numbers here, let's say you made $10,000 in profit, you'll probably owe, $3,000, so let's make it easy, $4,000 in taxes next year on that $10,000. Estimated payments are you saying, okay, I think I'm going to make $10,000 this year, I think I'm going to owe $4,000 when I do my taxes next year. So four times during 2019, I'm going to send the IRS $1,000 four times a year as an estimated tax limit so that when I do my taxes next year and my accountant or TurboTax says I owe $4,000, oh, no, I forgot. I already gave him the $4,000 four times throughout the year. Now, why do that? It's voluntary. You don't have to prepay your taxes, but there is something called an estimated tax underpayment penalty. If your tax bill next year ends up being more than $1,000, the IRS is going to go, well, you kind of should have known about that. And we'll slap your hand a little bit in a small little penalty for not giving us the money throughout the year. Now, a way to kind of mitigate that is if you also have a real job, a W-2 job, you can maybe go to your employer and go, hey, can you take out more from my paycheck? Because I got this side gig where they're not taking any taxes out, and I know I'm going to owe. So why don't I just take it out of sight, out of mind, and make it automatic, and have my job take out an extra, whatever, $500 a paycheck, $100 a paycheck, and do it that way. So I'm putting more to the system for my day job to cover the profit I might be making on my side gig. Make sense? So that's one way to kind of, and then you don't have to. You can owe $1 million at the end of the year. The IRS will say, okay, you owe us $1 million, but we're going to ding you. In that case, a lot of money, because you should have, if you made $1 million, you should have known unless you won the lottery, you should have known that ahead of time. So we're going to slap your hand by not giving us enough money throughout the year. That's why jobs take out money for your taxes automatically, because it's the law. It's the way our government works, basically. How do you calculate it? An easy calculation is basically just take 45% of every dollar in profit you make. That's a real kind of easy way to think of how much do I need for taxes at the end of the year. So you sold a painting for $1,000, hopefully. figure, okay, 450 of that, I know I'm going to, I need to put aside, because I know eventually I'm going to pay that when I do my taxes next year. How do I make the payments? You can mail them in, mail a check 4 times a year, online. You can do online, a direct debit from your checking account. The state also follows, most states, almost all states follow the same type of idea. You make the payments, you got to pay the government. And again, work with your advisor to calculate a safe number to maybe avoid any penalty if you know you're going to owe more than $1,000. Yeah?
Last year in California, I had to pay estimated California state taxes, but this year I didn't do the coupon for my tax preparer.
Call them. There might be reasons for that. So talk to them. Go, hey, what's up?
The reasons. I'm making about the same amount.
If you're making about did you get a refund last year?
Yeah,
from California.
I think we took it. I don't think we added it.
So yeah, so it might have been that the year before he said, hey, I think you're going to go this much in 2018. So here are those coupons. Here are those estimated payment vouchers. And then when you did the 2018 taxes, it ended up, oh, whoa, we didn't need to do that. So maybe that's why now in 2019 they said, well, you're good. But talk to them. I said we kind of blew through it, and again, because I think the more valuable thing here for you guys is, we got about 20 minutes. I think the value for you guys is, this is your time, ask whatever questions you have, finance, tax, anything, and we'll try to take care of you. Yeah? That's a ballpark, right? Again, it depends on what your, 15 is self-employment tax. Whatever your, where the state you live in? California, so 8-ish percent for California, that's 23. And then federal is depending on how much money you make, anywhere between 10, 15, an average is about 20, 25%. There you go. Yeah.
So my question is about the W-2 and your side hustle.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's inverse, right? So in my case, the quote-unquote side hustle
is more. Yeah, you would have been, or joint if you're married. Yeah, it's again, your business, side hustle, art, whatever it is, Uber driving, is reported on what's called a Schedule C, sole proprietor. How much money did I make? How many expenses did I have? This is what's left. Okay, if it's positive, that number goes onto your tax, your regular tax return, and they figure out the taxes. Now, because you have a side gig at 1099, you're not having taxes taken out. You've got to pay those taxes. Either at the end of the year or estimated throughout, right? So optimally, you would have a general idea of how much you're going to make in the side gig and say, okay, I think I'm going to make about $10,000, so maybe I should figure your accurate percentage and prepay that so that when I do my taxes this year, I'm not going to go, holy crap, I owe that much. And if your W-2's not as big as your side money, maybe it doesn't make sense to go to your work and go, hey, if you're having, I don't know, if you're making $1,000 a week, you can't say, hey, take out $900 for taxes. Maybe that doesn't make sense, right? Preparation is key. Yeah?
What about if you go to different conventions to make money in New York or Miami?
That's a very, theoretically, each state has a certain threshold of income where you have to report taxes there. I don't have them all memorized, but let's say, you go to New York Comic Con and you make $5,000 there. I don't know what their threshold is, but if New York State says, if you make less than $6,000, don't bother, you're good. If New York State says, if you make $1,000, yeah, you got to pay taxes to New York. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get double tax, because then if you live in California, you're going to say, hey, I have to pay New York X for the money I made in New York, because California's going to tax it all. No matter where you made it.
That 45%
I'm sorry?
That 45%.
No. Remember, state is a different, state taxes is a different thing. So New York's just as bad as California, right? Say 8%. New York says, give us $800 on your $1,000. $80 on your $1,000. Right? California's going to say, hey, you make $1,000 in New York, you owe us $80. But you could tell California, I already gave New York $80, so give me a credit. I don't double tax. I already paid New York. $80 on that $1,000. So California, you know, give you a credit for that. It's called credit, under state credit. First degree. Greedy.
My wife and I started filing jointly like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. but I realized that it's kind of messing it up. She has W-2s and I'm purely freelance. Mm-hmm. So our last taxes, I got like on paper, it just looks like we're making a lot of money. But yeah. So do you recommend just file it separately?
Rarely, so that's a very popular general question. I'd say you don't have to give me any numbers. 75-80% of the time, actually the higher, it's better to file joint. It's better. What's happening is that your side money, no taxes are being taken out. So you have a huge, that unless you're making payments as you go, those estimated payments, you got to pay taxes on all of it. She has taxes already taken out because she's W-2. So that's why you see a huge tax bill because of, sorry, your money. But everybody's tax, I mean, if you made $100,000 working for IBM, if you made $100,000 selling art, your tax bill is going to be the same. There's no, your money's your money, or the tax rate's the tax rate. Now you might have deductions, but let's say after expenses you made $100,000 and your salary's $100,000, your tax bill is going to be exactly the same. Everybody pays federal, Social Security, Medicare, and state. Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. I just skipped over the side. You don't have to make estimated payments. If you owe a lot of money at the end of the year, the IRS is kind of unhappy about that because they want, that's how our government works, is the money comes in, they spend it. The money comes in, they spend it. So you can owe $1 million. You might go to your tax guy and he goes, okay, you owe $1 million for 2019. That's fine, the IRS, I mean, but they're going to ding you a certain percentage because you didn't make those estimated. They're not going to throw you in jail. But there's a penalty there. Now, as far as the new Trump, for the new Trump tax law, in essence, there are a bunch of personal things, but this is for creatives and freelancers. In essence, your net profit, so let's say after expenses, you were positive by $10,000, 20% of that is tax-free now. So you're going to pay tax on $8,000. You get 20% of your net income after expenses is now tax-free. So I'm apolitical. I will not say anything politically, but that, in essence, is a good thing. And that's new in the new Trump tax law. You don't have to do anything. Now, there is a certain income threshold, which is, I don't know, it's going to be about $150,000 if you're single, $300,000 if you're married. If you're above that, and certain things come into play, and that might start reducing how much is tax-free. But if you're below 150-ish, single, 300-something, married, and you have net profitability on your business, not W-2, but business, 1099, 20% of that is now tax-free. Yeah?
But in California, it's a part of that $20,000 is also your property taxes, your DMV fees.
I'm not sure what you mean by 20.
Interest. Well, the way it's been explained to me is that now that there is a cap, now that the deduction is bigger, there's a cap on the amount of normal deductions.
There's one cap. And again, this is more just basic tax stuff, which everybody has to pay taxes, so I'll mention it.
So, but the idea that if you own your own home, if your property taxes, your interest, even if you don't own your own home, what you pay to the DMV and all that stuff. Yeah.
So what's cap?
There's a cap.
What the cap is it's just on property taxes, the taxes you pay to your state. Okay, so when you look at your W-2, you see how much money did they take out to pay whatever your state, California in this case, and DMV fees. Those three things. Add them all together. Okay, you're limited to $10,000 that you can deduct on your federal taxes. So if your property tax bill is $5,000 and you paid California $5,000, that's 10, you're good. let's say you live in California, in the Bay Area or down in LA, your property tax bill is $25,000 a year. You pay your state $10,000 a year. Your DMV is insignificant, a few hundred dollars, whatever. So that's $35,000. You used to be able to deduct that all. Now there's a cap of $10,000. That's all you can deduct. And that doesn't have to do with mortgage interest. It's just property taxes, the taxes you pay to California, and your DMV fees. That's the $10,000 cap.
Not mortgage?
No. Mortgage interest, as long as your loan now, if you buy a house now, as long as your loan is $750,000 or less, you can deduct it all. And if you bought a home before this tax law came out, that loan could have been $1.1 million. You get it up. That didn't change. The only thing that changed is if you buy a house now, up to $750,000, your loan, $750,000, the mortgage interest is deducted. Above that, it's capped. But that $10,000 is just those 3 days.
So if you're doing that,
I'm sorry, again.
Yeah.
So if you, let's say, I'll give an example. You like drawing just because you like drawing, and some people dig your stuff, and hey, if someone buys it, they buy it. You're not necessarily, you don't have a website, you don't have a table at the con. You just, maybe you post occasionally. It's kind of a hobby that you get some side money from. Okay? Golden rule, IRS is going to tax. If you find a dollar on the street, you have to pay tax on it. That's theoretical, right? Whether or not you're going to report that. But let's say, $1,000 or $500 throughout the course of the year. Theoretically, I'm not the IRS, but theoretically, you have to say it. I made $500, and you call it other income, hobby income. And if you have expenses, you can reduce that by only the money you made in your hobby. So again, let me give you an example. I spent $1,000 on a Wacom tablet because I do digital art, and I made $500 selling on the side some art as a hobby. I'm not going for it. You can deduct $500 of that tablet because all you made was $500 in hobby income. Now, if you're a business, hey, I got a website. I'm going to cons. I'm pimping myself. I'm trying to make some money. I'm hustling, right? Then the whole $1,000 can be deductible because now you're acting like a business. You're trying to make. It's a business versus just kind of something you do on the side.
I have a question on the home office expense, W-2 versus freelance contract.
W-2, forget.
Okay, so that is true then. For W-2, there is no more.
There are no.
Even if you're a W-2, but you're still working at home and this.
That's gone with the new tax law. That's a general new Trump tax law thing. If you're a W-2 employee, they completely got rid of any expense you have out of pocket, union dues. If you're a teacher, books. Well, teachers get $250. Home office, if you're a telecommuter,
right.
You have to travel out of your own pocket if you're a sales guy. But if you're paid on W-2, they got rid of deducting all of that. It's just gone.
But if I was a contractor, that's...
You're 1099, freelancer. 1099 means you're paid on a 1099 miscellaneous form instead of a W-2 form. If you're a 1099, you're responsible for all your taxes.
Okay, 1099 contract, because there are some W-2.
Again, 1099.
Okay.
That's if you're given at the end of the year a 1099 miscellaneous for the money you made, then that opens that up.
Got it.
You started, we're talking about coming to the con and meals and travel and all that. Let's say you're still in your city and you're meeting with people and you're going and you're doing Dutch treat meals or you're taking somebody out and you're trying to schmooze them.
Yep.
Now, I understand that that has changed for this year for the new tax law.
No.
It's still 50%?
50%. What changed is you can't claim entertainment, like tickets to the sporting. That used to be 50% too. Like if I gave somebody tickets to the ball game, that's entertainment. Tickets to the concert as entertainment, schmoozing down. That is gone. 50% is 50%. It hasn't changed.
And that's where I got confused because I was told that LLC, but it sounds like an S-Corp. That corporations are still taking all that stuff off.
Not necessarily. I think you need a new advisor.
No. I'm just asking in generality.
Yeah, because meals are meals. And again, the whole S-Corp thing is a very specific, Yeah. $600. Now, whether or not a company is going to issue that, you know, that's up to them. They're supposed to.
I can request it, though.
You can request it, let's go here. No matter how you made a dollar, if you earned it through 1099 work or through a job, you have to pay self-employed. That's Social Security, Medicare. Everybody's got to pay into that.
Okay, so follow-up question to that. You have a 45%.
That's a very ballpark general, yeah.
So can you break that down, including the self-employment taxes, like with pieces for rich?
It was in there. So self-employment tax is about 15%. Which is self-employment stands for Social Security and Medicare, FICA. Oh, gosh. But yeah, so the way the taxes you're going to have to pay is 25-ish percent. So it's on the bottom here. 25-ish percent for federal IRS, 15% Social Security, Medicare, and whatever your state. Maybe you live in Texas, no state tax. Yeah.
I work in the film industry, so sometimes jobs are W-2s and things like that.
Yeah.
And I also pay the new. So with the new laws, if I get at least one 1099 a year, then I can still deduct
the W-2s. Theoretically, if you're going to be by the letter of the law, then you're going to say, I'll make up numbers. I pay $1,000 a year for union dues. I made $20,000 on the 1099, $20,000 is W-2. Theoretically, and my time, half the year is 1099, half the year is W-2. So half of my union dues is deductible from my 1099, from my W-2. As I mentioned here, no work-related expenses are deductible against the W-2 income.
So the amount that you're deducting just has to be below what you're actually making.
I mean, theoretically, you can. I mean, if your union dues are $1,000 and all you make is $200 on a 1099, but again, you have to say, okay, how much did I make overall? How much money did I make that the union dues covered? Maybe it was $200 in the 1099 and then $1,000 or $2,000 on the W-2. You have to take that ratio. Letter of the law. You have to take that ratio. This ratio of that, like $1,000 union dues is for the $200 I made. The rest I can't do anything. New law.
Question that I have was when you said the rules change, if you send out promotional stuff at the end of the year to your clients?
No, the rules haven't changed there. You can still do that, although you are limited as a sole proprietor, you're limited to $25 per person.
How many times?
However many clients you have?
No, I mean,
one time. Well, yeah, because otherwise you could go, I'll give you anything. No. It's one person, $25 per person. For you. Yeah.
Do you have a reputation on like a solo 401k?
Yeah, that's huge. And again, that's kind of high level stuff, but if you're profitable, the idea that you can open up what's called a solo 401k, if you work at a traditional job, you might have heard of a 401k. If you have your own business, the fact that you can open up your own 401k and owning your own business, that's a potential huge savings. Yeah, that's very more way beyond the scope of this. Or what's called, if you've heard of a SEP IRA, that's another way where you can kind of reduce your taxes. And all you're doing is you're avoiding taxes, or you're postponing taxes, sorry. Because you're going to save your taxes now, put it in your retirement account, and then when you retire and take it out, that's when you pay taxes. They're always going to get their money. Just a matter of when. One more question. Yep.
Years is that
So a lot of people say two out of three, you can only have losses for 2 years, or you have to be profitable 3 out of 5. Okay, a lot of people say that. It might be that you just suck. But you're trying. Hey, I'm trying. Look, you know, the IRS sends you a letter. If you have loss 4 years, you probably get a nice little letter saying, hey, we noticed that, you know, talk to us about it. And remember those factors I had up here. These factors, if you can speak to these factors saying, hey, man, I'm trying. I got my website. I'm hustling. Nobody likes my stuff. But I think next year I'm doing it. Next year's the year. All I need is one. As long as you can hit these factors, that's okay. There are businesses like R&D company, a biotech company might spend $1 million on a new plant, right? And it'll take them 10 years before they turn a profit. I mean, Uber, I think, still, they're not even profitable yet. But they're still, so it's a general rule of thumb. They'll leave you alone, basically, if you claim 2 years of losses and then you have income, they'll leave you alone. They might question you if you have 4, 5, 6 years of losses. So I got to wrap up. I will stand here for a little bit, or we can meet outside if you have any other questions. But thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Thank you.